This is Deborah Beck, professor of ancient Greek literature in the Department of Classics at the University of Texas at Austin. My students and I are excited to welcome you to our podcast, Musings in Greek Literature.
Welcome to the fourth episode of our class podcast, Sophocles' Antigone in 2019. My name is Laura, and today we're going to cover Antigone lines 280 to 303, which contain Creon's furious reply to the news that the body of Polynices has been buried. But before we dive into the Greek today, I'd like to thank my friend Alistair Forsyth for composing and recording my introduction music. Alistair is a local Austin musician and music educator, and if you like what you heard of his work today, go ahead and check out his Patreon at www.patreon.com/AIFmusician. So, on to Antigone. Let's recap what's just happened leading up to our passage. A guard reports to Creon that someone has just given the body a burial, sprinkling it with dust and performing other funeral rites over it. He also reports that no one saw it happen, that the scene showed no traces of the culprit, and that the body remained untouched by birds and scavenging dogs. That is a rather supernatural occurrence. And after hearing this news, the chorus leader wonders, in line 278, if this astounding act could have been the work of the gods. What follows is our passage, in which Creon first rebuffs the chorus for that remark, and second, accuses the guards of being bribed to have done this deed themselves by a conspiracy of corrupt citizens. Creon's rage is palpable in his very first lines. Line 280, Pausai prin orges kaya me mestosai legon, me phoreithes anus tekai geron hama. Literally, stop talking before you stuff me full of rage so that you don't reveal yourself to be stupid as well as old. As our commentator Griffith notes, this language is strong for two reasons. Creon both uses a physically graphic verb, mestosai, giving us a vivid image of the extent of his anger, and he insults the elders of Thebes, men he specially called to counsel him. Already, we can see that Creon is so upset, he's abandoned his stately tone from when he addressed the chorus earlier in the play, preferring instead what our commentator calls crass language. He keeps going in his rage, saying, "You say ta uk anekta, unbearable things. When you say that the gods had foreknowledge of the deed regarding this corpse. For do you think the gods hid him, huper timontes hos eu ergetain, honoring him exceedingly as a benefactor, or someone who does good works? This man who came to burn the many-towered temples, their sacrifices, and their land, and to scatter their laws to the wind? Or do you see the gods as honoring tus kakus, bad men? Uk estin, of course not." And here we see why Creon thinks the chorus is being stupid. It doesn't make sense to him, in his moral worldview, that the gods would honor someone who has acted in attacking Thebes so obviously against them and their sacred city. As Griffith notes, these lines have a particularly sarcastic bite to them, as Creon sneers at the chorus for suggesting what he sees as an impossible act that is totally contrary to the gods' behavior. Clearly, Creon hasn't read up on his Greek tragedy. Claiming to know with any kind of certainty what the gods will and won't honor is a recipe for disaster. But we'll come back to that point. Further in the passage, we see Creon's conspiracy theory about what's happening here. As he says, "But before, when the men of the city were spreading my edict, they immediately were erothun emoi, roaring against me, and shaking their heads in secret, not holding their necks beneath the yoke as they should, so that they obey me." Here, we're starting to see some paranoia from Creon. He imagines an elemental rabble of men raging against him publicly, and yet also whispering behind closed doors, in a secret conspiracy, not submitting to his authority. These mystery men are responsible for what Creon thinks has happened, which comes in the next line. Creon says, ex epistemi kalos. I understand well what's going on here. These guards, Tutus, have been led astray with misthoisin, bribes, from those guys, the mystery men who go unnamed, to do this deed. And there is no institution that arose among men worse than arguros, than money. For the sake of time, I'll paraphrase the rest of the passage. Creon goes on to say that money is what destroys cities and homes, warps the mind of men towards evil, and introduces them to all unholy acts and all villainy. In his view, it was money that allegedly drove the guards to defy him by burying the corpse. And the men who did this act for hire will sooner or later suffer punishment. Well, there's a lot to unpack there. And what I think is particularly interesting about this passage is how other people characterize Creon. For example, our commentator Griffith provides a pretty negative reading of Creon. He cites him as using coarse, sneering, sarcastic language, and as having an obsessive suspicion of the Theban citizenry. Although Griffith notes that Creon's worry about corruption isn't totally absurd, he says that the suspicion is unfounded, and that Creon is behaving like a tyrant. But what does Griffith mean exactly when he says Creon is being a tyrant? Reading that remark, I'm reminded of what Dr. Beck said in the first episode of this podcast, that Antigone has been reperformed and recontextualized countless times by different societies. I feel that in a lot of these retellings, Creon is often cast as the cruel dictator, oppressing just and noble Antigone. In those readings, there's a clear good guy, Antigone, and a clear bad guy, Creon. One example that comes to mind is Bertolt Brecht's 1948 retelling of Antigone, in which the playwright alters little of the original text, except that he stages Creon in a Nazi officer's uniform and has all the other characters call him Führer. Notwithstanding the merit of these retellings, I have to wonder if reading Creon as an unhinged autocrat is a fair reading of the original Antigone. Because I, for one, kind of understand Creon in this scene. It's day one of his rule over war-torn, unstable Thebes, and literally everything is coming apart for him. I think that his anger is understandable, particularly if we recall who the chorus is supposed to be for him. In his speech after the Parados, Creon states that he called the chorus to him because they were especially loyal men, and he wanted them to help enforce the law by not yielding to those who break it. They, along with the guards, are the people Creon put in place to make sure his edict would be obeyed in the city. But as soon as he relays that to the chorus, two things happen. The guard reports that he failed to safeguard the corpse, and the chorus immediately yields, conceding that the act could have been divine, which positions them implicitly against the rule of Creon. So it rather makes sense that Creon sees what's happening as outrageous. His guards have failed, his advisors aren't with him, and a person or persons unknown broke his only law and remains at large. I think that's enough to make anyone lose their cool, as everything Creon has done so far to maintain order in the city has been disregarded and disobeyed. Can we really blame him for assuming the worst and assuming conspiracy, when the worst is happening to him? And really, this scene kind of makes me sad. Originally, when I taught the class, I actually focused on how it's rather funny that Creon uses such overblown language to lash out at the elders and to rave about conspiracies and bribery. Now, however, I see some of this humor along with intense dramatic irony. Creon is desperately trying to regain control, and he thinks he understands everything perfectly. Remember what I said earlier about Creon not reading enough Greek tragedy. It's precisely his obstinate efforts to use his own authority to maintain control that cause his undoing. Creon thinks he knows what's happening, epistemi kalos. But we know he understands nothing at all, and he gravely misunderstands what's happening in the city. He already can't accept that the gods would honor Polynices, a misunderstanding of religious custom and divine law that will drive the conflict between him and Antigone throughout the play. And he misunderstands the possible motives for this burial, already unable to conceive that respect, love, and obligation could have driven someone to do this, not the basest most motives of humanity, like bribery or jealousy. Maybe we can understand why Creon gets to this point, but we ultimately know that he's wrong on almost every level. And what we see in this passage, then, is the beginning of what will become apparent later on in the play. Creon's bad thinking, his misjudgment of the situation, and his insistence that he's in the right will cause his precarious situation as ruler to unravel even further. In this reading of Creon's character, he isn't just a power-crazed dictator. He's a man who makes mistakes, and they're mistakes we can understand. For me, at least, this is one of the reasons why the Antigone is so complex and so devastating. We readers can see Creon not as a mere evil tyrant, but as a man we can relate to. We can understand exactly why Creon does what he does, but we also know he goes about things in the wrong way, making the disaster of the play all the more, well, tragic. So, on that cheery note, that's the end of my podcast. If I've learned anything from this assignment, it's that the close reading and the in-depth thinking I had to do to teach this passage showed me both the complexity of the text and that of Creon's character. And if I've done my job well, I hope I've imparted that complexity to you. Thank you for listening to Sophocles' Antigone in 2019, and stay tuned for the next episode, in which my colleague Lyle will take up the second half of Creon's speech. See you next time!